Hello there, you're welcome to another interesting edition of Sport Africana, where we bring you the best of sport from an African perspective. My name is Oba Adeola Amokomo. It's been quite a while, but we are back in this season with a bang. I'm sure you'd have listened to our previous episodes in time past, and if you haven't, please go onto our podcast directory, Sport Africana. You can check us out on Apple, on Deezer, on Amazon, on Spotify, on all the major podcast platforms. You can get us and listen to all our previous episodes. I'm sure you know we try to talk about our stories from an African perspective. We try to celebrate our successes. We try to talk about our problems. We've got plenty of them. We try to see how we can get better. Bottom line, it's all about African sport. Of course, majorly we talk about football, and every now and then we talk about the other sports. Today is going to be a throwback to Korea-Japan 2002. It's over 20 years since the World Cup was hosted, and I think that was about the first time it was hosted in Asia. And of course, shortly it's going to be hosted in Qatar, the first Middle East country to host the World Cup. And Korea, Japan happened to be the first country from Southeast of Asia to host the World Cup. And again, we're going to be looking at that World Cup mainly from an African perspective as we commemorate the World Cup of 2002, Korea, Japan, which was a landmark World Cup. And who best could do the talking, if not someone who was present in Japan when the World Cup was hosted? And it's a well-known, well-respected Nigerian journalist, media person, broadcaster, and is well-known for his knowledge in basketball. But trust me, he's an all-rounder. But basketball is where a lot of people get to know him for, or where he made his mark, and he still does that a great deal. It brings me pleasure to introduce to you my big brother, Bode Oguntoyi. I don't know where to say.
Why would you be jealous? I'm sure your lovely wife takes good care of you. I can see it in your face.
Before then, that's not physically. Before then, was I not being taken care of?
Well, we will call family meeting and get to see whether that statement is true or should we take it with a pinch of salt. I'm not saying.
I'm sure she'll be very happy to hear that. But always a pleasure to have you. Yeah. It's been quite a while, and a lot has been happening on the Nigerian sports scene, the election, the basketball saga. But today we'll just leave all that out and take a throwback to Korea, Japan 2002, the World Cup. The first time it was hosted in Asia and Southeast Asia. And first of all, we're going to look at Nigeria, first and foremost, the qualification en route to the World Cup. That was going to be our third attempt, qualifying. That was our third time qualifying. Previously, we had qualified for several World Cup qualifiers. We went for the first time in 1998, which was kind of a mixed success.
Good, yeah.
Real stories that we heard in the camp. But going into Korea, Japan 2002, there seems to be like a transition from Nigerian football. Things started somewhat declining. So what was your impression after the 1998 World Cup going into 2002 World Cup? Obviously, there was the Africa Cup of Nations in 2000 before then. So you were a major stakeholder, being that you were very close to what was happening back home. What was your impression of the Nigerian Super Eagles post-1998 going into that?
First off, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be part of these conversations because, first off, both of us have our roots in a nation where history is not taught in schools anymore. And so when you see the generation coming, whether fans or media people, you want to put these stories out as much as possible for them to understand where we're coming from, why we say the things we say now, and then for us to get a clear view, a clear picture of where we are going or where we should be heading. The same thing goes for our policymakers. Sometimes you get this idea that they don't have a sense of history, or they don't care to know what had gone wrong and what they need to do to ensure that these things don't happen again, to form policies that will ensure that those coming behind, whether as participants in the sports or as reporters, as we are, or as observers, they get the full benefit of what good sports does for a nation, beyond just the financial aspects and the feel-good factors. There's many other things that are connected to it, both economically and socially, that we don't seem to appreciate when we throw all these policies and all these behaviors at different levels, at the fans. And so these stories are important. So it's good what you're doing. Now, you mentioned that there are always stories connected with the super groups. Even in 1994, that we all of us cheered as being a successful debut World Cup. It could have been much, much better. You and I know that. But the Nigerian factor crept in. The game that Nigeria lost to Italy, we should never have lost that game. And if you had won that game, we would have had Bulgaria at some point. So the groups could have gone much far and set a record that other African teams would be dreaming of meeting. But here we are, again, 98 World Cup. I'm sure you heard some of the stories. I think it was Pele that saw some super good players partying before an important game, and he told them, "You guys have no idea what you are doing. You're on the verge of making history. You can make history, but here you are before a big game. Who does that?" We had stories of how players were arriving for training in different flashy cars, you know, instead of coming with the team bus. But that was France 98. Then going on to 2002. Of course, all of us knew what happened in the qualifiers, when the coach that qualified. Funny enough, the road to 2002 was probably one of the best World Cup qualifiers that we had, if I remember correctly, that the Eagles were winning games away from home after the arrogance of post-96 almost cost us our qualifiers in 98. Remember that after we won the Olympics, we became, hey, we are the best in the world and no team could stand us. That was one of the things that led to our downfall in 98, remember? That we had a game. First, we qualified by the skin of our teeth. Remember that that was a Ipeba goal that against Bulgaria that handed us the ticket to play against Denmark. And then we started talking about who is Denmark. We are waiting for Brazil. So that arrogance of 98 that led to all that talk, you know, that led to the downfall against Denmark.
Let me show you it's not a joke, but it really happened. I know we're talking about Japan, Korea. Prior to that game against Denmark, I was watching a FIFA documentary program called Football Mundial, and the focus was on Michael Laudrup, the Danish legend. And they asked him a question. Obviously, the focus was on him. In the course of that interview, they asked him about, you know, France 98, where, well, they were credited to have performed very well. And he mentioned something I'll never forget. He said, prior to the game against Nigeria, that they were somewhat written off. He said he was even shocked. He said he saw, you know, players, they know themselves. So he said he saw your coacher and they were exchanging pleasantries. And he was like, "Oh, how are you doing?" and everything. And JJ said, "Oh, I'm fine." That his wife just gave birth. And Michael said, "Oh, your wife gave birth and you're here playing." He said, "Yes." Is that because of this game that he wants to just play this game and after this game, go back, then come back in time to play against Brazil? Michael Laudrup said
in his mind.
He said he was shocked that, oh, this guy already believed that they're going to walk over us. Because myself and you know what the result ended. then he had more time to see his wife.
Look, it wasn't just Okocha. Even back home then in Nigeria, the word on the streets was that, look, let's just show up against Denmark, beat them, and then face Brazil. In fact, I was a staff of complete communications then, and our headline was, you know, they are going to play that game in Toulouse.
Yeah.
And headline was, Eagles were too good to lose. That was the headline. That was the headline in a major publication back then. So Korea Japan 2008 was like, okay, we had mellowed because we had been humble in 98. So we focused well on the qualifiers for 2002. And the Eagles did very, very well to qualify for that World Cup. If I remember correctly, that was when we won a tough away game in Sudan at Omdurman. That won that tough away game. That's why Ibenis scored 2 goals in that away game. The tide had changed. We had learned some lessons. But then, of course, it turned out that we didn't learn enough of those lessons. Because after we had qualified, we changed tone again. We started talking about looking for a world-class coach.
Talking about the qualification for the 2000, I think that was the one that Buffred Drew resigned. We lost a game against Liberia, if I remembered. We lost a crucial game and there was a panic mode before Amode Shuaibu took over, if I remember.
Yep. And then Amode Shuaibu took over and then turned things around, and then they got to go to the World Cup. And then we believe that, oh, you know what? Amone Shabu is not good enough again to handle the team and stuff like that. But beyond that, I think that there are a lot of lessons to learn from that work. I've read a lot of our colleagues and some fans saying that the tactics deployed by Chief Onigbinde wasn't all that. And then I remember that I had an interview with Taribo West at Narita Airport on their way out of the country after they had failed to qualify from their group.
Right, before we go into that, let's backtrack a bit.
Okay.
So, before the World Cup proper, we have played AFCON 2002 in Mali. I remember very well. I was in Nigeria then. During the, in fact, I think I got to Nigeria a day before the opening game that we played against Algeria. I remember myself and my dad, we were going to Benin to see my junior brother because I arrived on Sunday. Then on Monday, we went to Benin to see my brother, and we arrived, we went somewhere else in time for the first game. I remember very well. So I was in Nigeria then because that's where things sort of started degenerating. So
Yes.
what was your general overview of that AFCON?
Now, the way that AFCON was handled, like you said, that was where things started degenerating. One of the things that stood out in my mind, and this was where Sunday Oliseh, for those who are younger than we are and who are not privy to these stories, that was where the reservations about Sunday Oliseh, this is where it started from, especially with the Nigerian press. Now, I can't remember whether it was a friendly game before the AFCON or whether they were on the way to the AFCON itself. But I remember the Eagles made one very, very difficult journey. With hindsight, we might want to excuse Sunday Oliseh's behavior. But also with the same hindsight, you look at where he was coming from. And at that point, he had played professional football in Europe for a while. There were certain things expected from a player who had been exposed to that culture, where decorum, both to his teammates, officials, and to the press, where they are concerned. You can be upset and you can express your grievances in certain ways without appearing rude, you know, because at that point, what had happened. Like I said, the Eagles had just gone through a difficult journey and they were fatigued and they arrived at a point. And somebody from NTA wanted to interview him as the captain and he just waved the person away who was being recorded. Just waved the person away and said, look, don't disturb me. Just, I'm not in the mood to talk right now. Now, here's the thing. You are the captain of the team. The press, they are not your enemies. They have seen what you have gone through. They want to hear your story. Even if it's 2, 3 minutes, say in a few words what you are going through and what you expect and express your grievance. He did not. He put his frustration on the reporter. Now, what happened? And from that point, it snowballed because it was aired by NTA. People saw the other side of what they shouldn't see. And from that point, everything just fell apart. The Super Eagles now got to Mali. I suspected that because it was the events from that place that spiraled, that snowballed into the NFF announcing that some players were banned and then some abandoned the team. And that led to the team we saw at the World Cup, which was of far less capacity. It was a young team. And I say this without any disrespect to the players, the boys that went to that World Cup, they did their best. But we had players in probably other departments that maybe would have done a better job than what this greenhouse, because for a lot of them, it was their first time at a Senior World Cup. For a lot of them, it was their first time at a major tournament. We just threw them in at the deep end. And so they gave their best, but it wasn't enough. Now, understand something about, I always say that when we go to the World Cup thinking we are going to win it, we sometimes do a disservice to those nations that had planned, that had worked, mapped out strategies, and knew what they are going to do at every point. To nations that had no chaos in their playing ranks, no chaos in their coaching ranks, no chaos in their logistic ranks, and no chaos in their administrative ranks. They are calm, they had planned, they are ready. And we arrive there with chaos in one or two places and we want to win it. It doesn't happen that way. Everything is a long-term plan, and we don't plan enough. Hey, if Nigeria goes and wins the World Cup with our chaos, I'll be happy. But I'm just saying that I don't think it should be fair for those nations who have done so much to get to that point that just get and just win, and then you think it does happen that way. So when we arrive at that World Cup, the way we arrived, I don't believe we should go to the World Cup thinking we can win it. Let's go there to learn some lessons and prepare well for the next one. But the unfortunate thing, like I said at the start, is that because we don't learn from our past mistakes, we go to to almost every World Cup with the same chaotic background dogging us, and we want to win it. And then we start castigating the team and the coaches. We ask them to do the impossible. You know, like we saw with the story you shared about Okocha, the players even start believing the hype that they are all that. And so, when arrogance creeps in, you are setting your team up to fail. We've got to be able to tell them the truth at every point that look, there are some things you are not doing right. Do this things right. But sometimes when you say this truth, they say, oh, you are not patriotic. You don't like Nigeria. You want us to fail. But here we are. So that 2002 team was already set up to fail even before they got to Japan.
Now, before we got to the team proper, now talking about Japan,
2002, yeah.
2002, you obviously you were representing a media outlet at the time. What was your impression on getting to Japan? You know, what was your current of the atmosphere, the feel when you got to Japan, that well, first World Cup in Asia, as you arrived, what was your impression? What was the whole thing? What was the razzmatazz, the hype? What was the mood like in Japan when you arrived?
My impression started from before I left Lagos. Unfortunately, a lot of my colleagues didn't see what I saw. I'll tell you a story to buttress what I just said. First off, the Japanese embassy made it easy for everybody, all right? Whether you're accredited or not, you work for a recognized media house, you want to go to the World Cup because they understand that there are so many stories around the World Cup apart from what's happening on the field of play. That's what a lot of people don't understand. When you attend the World Cup, and I'm saying this now for the benefits of younger colleagues who might want to, might think of covering the Olympics or the World Cup later. When I went to that tournament, I did not have accreditation. But the stories I did outside the stadium not only caught the attention of Nigerians, caught the attention of the Japanese media because they saw me walking, wanted to know what I was doing. When they saw my footage, I was like, wow, this is different. And they had me on their set to talk, and they now did a documentary on myself to talk about my coverage of the World Cup. But I digress. When I got to the embassy, the first thing I noticed was that on the table in the waiting area, there was a lot of literature on what you expect when you get to Tokyo. For the media or for whoever it is that came in to understand. And I like, were waiting for the visa section to do their job. I just picked up the literature and started reading. And there, I saw a pamphlet that says that for 2 weeks in Japan, if you pay 25,000 yen, which was about $250 that time, if you pay 25,000 yen, you can go anywhere in Japan with any form of transport. Once you purchase that pass, show it, get on a bus. Local bus, get on the Shinkansen, send us a bullet train, and you can go anywhere for 2 weeks, flat out. Now, I'll tell you the importance of that later, of that information later. So I just found that information in my head. Okay, 25,000 yen, $250, my 2 weeks of logistics is covered, right? Because, of course, they are trained anyway. So from that point, you knew that, okay, if you do ABC, you can get to D easily. Then I arrived in Narita. And the first thing that caught my attention was that, Omo, for the first time, I saw organization at its best. As you come out of the luggage area on the plane, of course, if you're a foreigner, they'll know instantly. They know their nationals and they know that it was World Cup season. They had English speakers everywhere, hosts and hostesses who speak English. So they ask you, do you need anything? If you need anything, there's information center, go there, whatever you want to do. If you're going to any hotel, check here, we'll tell you how to get there. Hotels that had buses waiting, hotels that you had to take a cab, they had all this information ready for you as you arrived. Funny thing, when I got there, because I had a long layover in South Africa, in Johannesburg, my flight was Lagos, Johannesburg, Hong Kong, Narita. I had my laptop bag, I had my carry-on bag, and I had one extra bag. So now that extra bag that I had my Bible, my leftovers from the plane. I was collecting food because I didn't know what was going to happen. So I collected a lot of things to eat when I get to the hotel in case there was no food. I forgot the bag. As I was talking to the so when I first got in, I was speaking to as I was talking to one of the hostesses, the bag felt heavy, so I put it down. Remember, I had other bags, so I put it down. Then when she pointed me towards the information center, I just left my bag and I went. And then I got on the bus to the hotel. It was the following morning. I just said, wait a minute, I had an extra bag because that bag had my Bible in it and I wanted to study the Bible. And I said, oh, so the following morning, I got on the bus, went back to the airport because it was a free bus. Went back to the airport, asked for my bag. You know, when I asked, where did you forget the bag? I said, by that pillar, I just on the computer, said, oh. Your bag had Bible, this is, I said yes. I said, okay, go to this room, pick it up. All within 3 minutes.
Wow.
I was stunned. Coming from Lagos, I was stunned that you forgot the bag at the airport and they found it. So that organization was out of this world. They had people ready to help. They had people willing to help. They had the information thing was on point, on point. So my first impression was that they were ready for the World Cup. They were waiting for it. And from what I saw on the streets after, they were waiting to actually celebrate. Not, of course, the success of the Japanese team. Which the nickname the Blue Samurai was celebrated, but there are other things going on that showed that this was World Cup season and they're going to enjoy it no matter what happened.
That's, I mean, for me, that's a very good experience because from what I know, every team have a they have a camp base.
Oh yeah.
I know England, for example, they were living in a place called the Awaji Island. That's where England were. Nigeria were based in, I think, is it Saitama? I'm not too sure. I can't remember.
Osaka.
Osaka, yeah, Nigeria,
Osaka.
Osaka. So, what was the access like to, obviously, your focus was Nigeria. What was your
Yep.
access like to the team that you primarily went there for?
Now, here is the thing. Apart from the language translators that they have, that they had everywhere, they also had one media person and one language person attached to everything. So because Nigeria is primarily an English-speaking country, they had a media person and they had a language guide that was working with the team. So it was simple. You get to the hotel, you tell them what you need, they speak to one of the aides who speaks to the super goods media officer, you get the access you need. It was seamless, it was easy, it was direct. And no matter what was happening with the team, they ensured that the team was always available for you to speak with. Then there are some rumors, a funny story. You know, some journalists that were heavily sponsored, right? They went the route of the first one to Korea, then from Korea they came to Japan, and then when the goose lost out, some of them went back to Korea, some stayed in Japan, and they stayed to the finals because of, like I said, they're heavily sponsored. And then they came and said, oh, if you are at the World Cup and you're accredited, oh, the Korean government, at that time, Kia was just becoming popular, and they said they were to promote their culture, and they want to give you a brand new car to take home. We thought it was true. It wasn't. It wasn't.
Oh, wow. So now that's talking about access. Now, we're not going to go back into, before we talk about Super Eagles, obviously, you would have one eye at the other African teams that are playing. So Senegal played the opening game against France, who were the
France
champion,
and they won.
and they won. Now, I think that was the last time a defending champion defends, opens
Lo
the
lost
bottle.
that.
Opens
Yeah,
the bottle. That's the last time. Now, when you heard or when you heard about that result, what was the feelers from a Nigerian perspective, knowing that Nigeria was going to be playing some few days later?
it was massive. Because remember that at that time, I think France went to the World Cup with the highest scorer in France and England in the attack. The expectations of France was very, very high. And because you remember that we knew Senegal from 2000 when they played against us at the National Stadium. We knew they had the Kalilu Fadigas, those boys that are speedy and tricky and dangerous. But we didn't think that they had enough in their tank to defeat France. So for them to hold France goalless, scoreless, and then not get a goal and go on to win the game was just insane. It was crazy. And of course, it fueled the arrogance of Nigeria. Look, we knew that our team wasn't all that. And we knew that because our team that faced this same
Senegal.
Senegalese in the semifinals or the quarterfinals of the Nations Cup in Lagos in 2000. That team had been decimated by suspensions and abandonment. It was the same thing. It was the same team. That's another reason why a lot of us felt bad given the events that transpired before. Because you look at that Senegalese team and how far they went, what they almost accomplished, and you felt like, you know what? Maybe if we had a hold and given how close Nigeria too came to getting results in some games, because the game against Argentina and England are so tight, you keep telling yourself that maybe they had, if it's not quality, maybe they would have eked out something. You keep having that regret at the back of your mind. So when Senegal won that team, it was like, won that game, it was like, ah, we wish we had a full team present here. Maybe we would have been able to. But what that did for me was that it put my focus on Senegal. That no matter what happened to the Super Eagles, let me see how far this team will go. And then there's a story that connected this Senegalese team and the story I told you about the travel arrangements that I saw in Lagos. There's a story there.
We'll come to that story.
Come to that.
We'll come to that story shortly. We'll just go on a quick break and we'll be right back. Don't go away.